What's going on a Sunday morning? Protecting Military Families, 104.5 WOKV, Jacksonville's News and Talk. And we are doing this on a Sunday morning, as we always do, with the one and only Chris Brochu of Brochu Law. Chris, how are we doing this Sunday morning?
Casey, doing great. Good morning. Really excited for today's episode. I actually have a case manager from my office. Her name's Crystal. She has a great background with assisting military families with VA disability claims. You know, now she's assisting with TSJLI and Camp Lejeune claims. So we're really excited to have her on the show today. We've got so much to cover in just not enough time. But before we get into it, friendly reminder, as always, if you are a military family and you believe that you may be entitled to greater military benefits, or the VA or your VSO has told you that, you know, a certain number of benefits are the only things that you're entitled to, please feel free to give us a call. Our law firm offers a second opinion. It's free to give us a call. We'll review your records and your military benefits at no cost to you. If we decide to work together because we find, you know, a military benefit that you've left on the table, or a legal right that you may have available to you, at that point in time, we would enter into a fee agreement. Everything that we do at Brochu Law for military families and consumers is on a contingency fee basis. So there's no upfront cost. We don't require any money from military families to pursue these claims. We advance all costs on behalf of military families, and there's no fee unless you win. So with that being said, Crystal, welcome on the show. How are you doing this morning?
I'm great. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So this is a little bit outside of your normal your normal firm duties. So I appreciate you coming on the show. We're excited to talk VA disability with you today. Before we get going, Crystal is a Navy veteran. Crystal, can you tell us, thank you for your service, but can you tell us a bit about your service history and some of your background information?
Absolutely. Thank you. I was in the Navy for roughly 6.5 years. I was a crypto tech long before, I guess why they still had them. They're gone now, most of them. I got out, I went to Iraq for a little while, and then I worked for contractors getting people over to Iraq, followed by helping the I wanted to help veterans. I knew that was my calling. And so I joined the VA, and I went to school to, you know, further, I guess, just get my education so I'd be more skilled in continuing to help veterans. And that's just been my calling. So I worked for the VA as a VSR, which is a veteran service rep, up until I was finally assigning percentages. I left the VA and I worked for one of the largest VSOs in the nation for a short period, and decided that ultimately I just wanted to help veterans in a different way, and that's when I joined Brochu Law.
That is a great timeline of your service history to our military families and also to our nation, and we are so appreciative of that. Crystal, let's go back in time to your VA, your time at the VA. What did you, what were your initial job duties there? What did you do at the VA?
Initially, I was assigned as a veteran service rep in the development process. So a veteran files a claim, it would land on my desk. We obtain all the records. So we need to make sure that, you know, depending on their time frame of service, we get the records from the appropriate place. We get all the medical records. We review them as thoroughly as possible to tab all the evidence to get it to a medical examiner, you know, get so we can get exams done. Then once all of that's completed, you know, we get it back on our desk. We make sure it's prepped and ready for the rater to take control and assign a rating.
Okay. This is super important, I think, for military families to understand the sort of lifespan of their VA disability claim or their other claim. So I want to break this down even further. So let's say, just for fun, you know, for an example, name a claim that you used to see people submit. I mean, were they submitting CRSC? Were they submitting SMC, VA disability? Like, what types of claims were they submitting to you?
So they were all VA disability claims or the SMC, the special monthly comp claims. Those are the most, I guess, the most ones I saw, like the primary ones I saw. Those sometimes entailed character of discharges. So if someone came in with something that was less than other than honorable, we would have to do, or if it was an other than honorable or less, right, we would have to do a character of discharge determination. Military sexual trauma is basically a specialty within the VA. They get handled by special VSRs. So, you know, I handled those. I didn't see CSRC. A lot of the, because I was in pre-development, so I did all of the developing of the case. Those would have been handled by a post member. Anything with retirement or special pays is handled by post.
Okay, so as an example, veteran comes to you with a claim that's less than 100%. I want you to create an example for me. So veteran comes to or submits a claim to your regional office. You know, name the percentage for me. I mean, let's say they're at 30%.
Well, it could be any percentage. The way the VA works is they review the file, but they don't review it for anything you could be entitled to. The VA will only consider claims that a veteran specifically claims. So, you know, say I'm claiming ringing in the ears and, you know, from being at the gun range. So I claim that, and the VA sees that I had an ankle injury in service. Well, they're not going to say, oh, well, they had an ankle injury, we should ask them to file a claim for that. They won't do it. That's just not how it works. They can only look at claimed conditions.
Okay.
So they will only look at the ringing in the ears and process the claim for the ringing in the ears. They will not process anything else they see in the record.
Right.
Unless it's a fracture. If they do see a fractured bone, then they will send a letter to the veteran and say, we noticed in your service treatment records you fractured this bone. If you would like to file a claim for it, please do so on the proper form.
That's
the only time they will do that.
Okay, so I should have been more specific. I'm glad even that we're breaking it down to this level. So let's say service member has been denied conditions that they believe medical conditions that they believe they're entitled disability compensation. Properly file it with your regional office. You receive that claim. Explain to me what happens when the VA gets that claim. What would you do with that claim? How would you review it? How would you handle it? What's the time frame? You know, what is it? Is it a short amount of time? Is it a long amount of time? How much time do they spend on each claim? Can you get into some of those details?
So, by law, a VSR, any employee of the VA, when they look at a record, they're supposed to review every page of that record to make sure there's no errors and make sure we're doing what's best by the veteran. However, the VA also has, I guess, it's the production and quality standards that they hold on each employee. And in theory, it's a great idea. However, if an employee has to process, you know, 10 points a day, but they only get a half a point per claim or 2 points per claim, depending on how many issues the veteran has, they don't necessarily get to get through all of those, right? So sometimes they're not as thorough as they could be in the review.
So
files a claim. Oh, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to stop you there for a second. So similar to the claims that we review, right, at Brochu Law, we get some clients where we only review, let's say, 70 records, and we've got other clients where we have 830, right?
Correct.
Is that similar to what you're talking about? They have varying amounts of documents that they submit, but the VA rep only has a certain number of time they can spend on each claim. Is that kind of what you're getting at?
Correct. Well, especially if they're trying to make their production standards, right? Because everyone wants to advance, right? In their career field, they don't want to be held back. They're trying to move forward, better salaries and whatnot. They want to make their production standards so they can keep their job. And if they, you know, miss those production standards and their job's being held over their head, then obviously they're going to pick up the pace on what they're doing, and they might not be able to have the ability to be as thorough. So they might miss some things in their review in trying to get that done.
But you agree with me that they are looking out for veterans. They want to help veterans. It's just some of the parameters may not afford them as much time as some of these claims require. Is that absolutely fair to say?
Absolutely. It's absolutely fair to say. I was with the VA for many years, and I never worked with somebody who didn't want to help veterans. All of my coworkers, my coaches, every meeting that was held, it was like, you need to do everything you can to get the veteran, you know, every benefit they're seeking within the law, right? We have to follow the law, but that's what we want to do. Our job is to help veterans. The VA is an organization because it is there to help veterans. I know a lot of individuals may not have that same thought, veterans particularly who file claims and get denied, but I guess that's the good thing about working with Brochure Law now is I don't have those parameters that the VA employees have to where I can review every single page to get that done and help the veteran understand the claims process and ease their frustrations because, you know, they want to know why they were denied, and they have a letter that states why they were denied, but it's legal, right? It's all legal terminology in their letter. It's just frustrating, and they don't want to work through it. And that leaves a bad taste in their mouth for the VA, right? Then it's the VA that's not doing the job. But again, I think every person at the VA really does want to do their best and help veterans. They just have parameters they're working in that kind of prohibit that sometimes.
I think that's really encouraging for military families to know is that, you know, they're not up against this evil empire. I mean, the VA is full of, you know, a lot, I would say mainly veterans that are trying to help military families, right? I mean, that's something that is important to know. But I agree with you. I think sometimes, you know, regulations or red tape gets in the way. And that's where we come in, right? If we don't think somebody's gotten a fair shake, that's where we appeal or investigate further. I mean, there are a number of ways to do that. But Crystal, let's talk about, okay, so that was your first job with the VA, and then you also did rating decisions with the VA. Is that right?
I did. So I went from VSR. I was an authorizer for a short period, and I did COD determinations and MST, and then I went into rating. So again, much like the development process, I had to basically, a claim comes across my desk. It says, they say, this is ready for a decision, make a decision. But I have to review every claim the veteran's ever made. I have to make sure the VA didn't make any errors in their previous decisions. And then I review medical records to make sure that the claim can be substantiated with it, and I review the medical opinion. If I find an error in the medical opinion or conflicting information in the medical opinion, I would send that back to the examiner or to another examiner, right? If we had, so say the veteran submits a positive opinion and the VA has a negative opinion, I would take both opinions and send them to a different examiner to get the tiebreaker, basically.
Okay, that's really important for our military families to understand. I want to break this down further. And, you know, we're talking about some things here that are really going to illuminate this process. And I think it's super important. So explain the tiebreaker. So you and I talk about this a lot. When the VA has a negative opinion and a veteran has an independent examiner that has a positive opinion, they cancel each other out and a tiebreaker opinion is needed, right?
If it doesn't happen on the front end, like if, to say the veteran submits a positive opinion, right, and in the very beginning, and it's against the VA's negative opinion, then they get the other opinion. It's basically we have two opinions and here's all the evidence, and we ask a third doctor to review both opinions and all the evidence and make a determination. And that has to happen each time. So even if it's not an opinion, that it's obviously positive if it is a provider's opinion, but it could be the veteran simply stating, my knee is related to service because of this, and this is what happened. And I go to this doctor now, and even this doctor agrees, right? And we have medical evidence that shows the doctor stated veteran was seen on this date and complained of knee pain. He said his duties and service did this, therefore, you know, it could be related to that. Even just having a little bit of medical evidence or a lay statement from the veteran is enough to be conflicting against a negative opinion. So therefore, the VA has to send all that evidence to a new doctor. For a third opinion.
And the third opinion, just so we're clear for the listeners, the third opinion would be the VA directs the veteran to go to this, you know, third examination that is going to be set up by them, but also performed by one of the medical professionals that they decide to act as a tiebreaker.
Correct. Yeah. If it's not with a VA hospital, it will be with one of their subcontractors. The VA has some contracted examining agencies that they use. So it would be with one of them or one of their VA hospitals.
Okay. And I think we're going to get into this on the other side of the break, because I think that's a really, really important thing. Going to any of these SP exams, going to any of the medical exams that are scheduled by the VA, it's really, really important for veterans and military families to understand the purpose of the examination and understand what the result is, the end result is, right? Like I think we're going to sort of break this down on the other side of the break because it's important. But just so everyone can understand kind of what the purpose of the examination is and what the military is looking at the results.
Right.
Before we get to any of that information, though, I want to go back to when you were rating, you know, VA disability compensation decisions. What sorts of things are you looking at? So we know that the VA has parameters for its employees, but what sorts of things are you looking at to overturn the original decision?
So to overturn an original denial, we're looking for a positive opinion, right? We're looking for more positive evidence on the side of the veteran. The VA has done a really good job with keeping stuff uniform and with their exams. They now have to put it into a system. So they take the exam. So a back exam, you go in for range of motion and you tell the doctor it's painful, and the provider is supposed to get your range of motion while you're in, right? Like side to side. And that would be on any joint, but this is just an example. So that comes back to the rater. The rater has a calculator that it goes into. Again, the VA did a great job with that. So the rater just has to put the numbers in and it will generate what that percentage is. So it's no longer, so it's left up to basically a computerized system rather than, I guess it doesn't completely eliminate human error, but, you know, of somebody getting the measurements wrong.
So the purpose is to make it more objective?
Correct. So they have that. They have that with all of their exams. I mean, anything from headaches, joints, they have the goal four ones like chronic fatigue and all the symptoms. Well, you put those in. Mental health, you put all the symptoms in, or all the, you know, to really get an accurate look at the severity of the condition, and it will automatically generate what that percentage is based off of the examination alone for the veteran.
So let's...
And then... Go ahead.
Oh, no. I want you to continue. Sorry. I thought you were finished there.
Oh, no. So once that goes in and it comes up and it'll count, you do that for each condition the veteran claims, and it automatically will give an overall percentage. So it's nice as long as... But the issue is that sometimes providers in their exams will, in the notes section or remarks, will indicate some other things, and that's what you know, the rater needs to take time to look at and say, oh well, specifically, I have an example, is I had one where the examiner marked everything was normal, but then with normal with pain, and this was a individual's back exam, normal with pain, but then in the end indicated she believed the veteran was exaggerating, you know, his actual range of motions were whatever they were that she documented with pain. So that there is, obviously we have to use what the actual range of motion is. She just can't make all normal if she believes that. So that there, we take that information, we send that for a different exam because it's obviously conflicting. It's not going to give us accurate, but they have to look at all of that to make sure the veteran gets the best, you know, rating that they're entitled to.
Please explain, if you could, from your kind of position working at the VA, what happens or what's the next step in the process once, you know, you submit a military family submits additional evidence and the military says, oh, sorry about that. We actually do agree with you. Your 30% is now 70%, or your 50%, 60% is now 100%. What happens from there on the VA side?
It will generate, we have to go through and review all the times the veteran has claimed that. And as long as we have to look to see if it has been continuously claimed. So if, you know, say 2020, the veteran files for an increase and the VA says, nope, it's not an increase, or it's not even granted, right? We're denying it. And then 6 months later, the veteran gets a little bit of medical evidence, submits it in, there's a claim and it's processed and granted. Well, then it would go back to the original date of claim for that condition, as long as it was within a year. So that's the biggest one. So they find the effective dates, right? So after you have a rating, you have to find your effective dates to make sure that we don't miss anything. And if as long as the veteran or one of their representatives continuously pursued that claim, it will be compensated appropriately back to the proper date.
Okay. We're going to talk about continuous claims on the other side of the break. I know we're running out of time, Casey.
We are running out of time, but it was good conversation. It's good information people need to know. And by the way, if you missed any of it, WOKV.com, you can re-listen, or you can go Chris's website, Chris's YouTube, brochulaw.com, brochulaw on YouTube. Everywhere you type in brochu, you'll find Chris, and you'll find a video version of this show, thanks to Justin at Nova Productions. So go back and listen, get all the information. If you're just jumping in, stick with us through the break. We got more with Crystal. We got more with Chris on the other side. 104.5 WOKV, Jacksonville's News and Talk. We'll be right back. The 7 o'clock hour, 104.5 WOKV, Jacksonville's News and Talk, right here on the radio and far beyond with WOKV.com. And our video version of the show, you can find it wherever you are at. You don't have to be in Jacksonville, but if you are in Jacksonville, that's where you can contact Chris Brochu, 904-201-1771. We are protecting military families. Chris Brochu is the guy. Crystal is with us as well. They are talking all the information you need to know.
So Crystal used to work for the VA. She worked for a major VSO, and she's also a Navy veteran. She has a really great handle on everything VA disability and military benefits. So I'm so happy to have her on the show. And if you want, you know, my help and you want my team's help, feel free to give us a call, 904-201-1771 or case CASE at brochulaw.com. Crystal, you still with us?
I am.
Sorry, that was a pretty long-winded opening again, but here we are.
Had to get the info out there, Chris.
I got to get the info out there. It's too important not to get out there. Crystal, let's jump back in. Before we went to break, you started talking about continuous claims, and I want to break that down a bit further for our military family listeners. A continuous claim is simply one where you are continuing to file within the one-year time parameter. So the VA regulations have a sort of loose statute of limitation. And I say loose because it, unlike a civil claim, and we'll use this as an example, if you were in an automobile accident in the state of Florida, the date of the accident, you'd have 4 years to file a lawsuit, or you could never bring a claim ever. With a VA disability claim, you have 1 year from the date of filing to continue to pursue it. And if you don't, then you may lose out on back pay. But let's say you got a VA rating in 2004, you're rated at 10%, and then you never filed an appeal, you never filed a supplemental claim, and you're listening right now and you say, huh, I wonder if I'm entitled to more. You can file an appeal at any point in time, but you just may not be eligible for back pay. Crystal, I got to ask you, did I cover all of that correctly? I've got to ask the VA, the former VA employee, did I get that right?
Mostly. So if you file a claim and you're given 10%, I say you're 10% for a knee, but you're denied everything else, then yes. At any time for an increase, you can file anything you're ever service-connected for. You can always file an increase. You could file it within a month of getting your rating. It doesn't matter. You could file it at 20 years, 30 years. That once you're service-connected, it's connected in that essence, as long as it was done correctly. If you're denied, you do have 1 year to file for that denied issue in order to receive the back pay, right? That's continuously pursued. And it's not of the initial filing. It's 1 year from the rating decision. So if you file, you know, today and it takes the VA 2 years to process your claim, your time clock doesn't start until the day they make that decision. But it would still, as long as you file within a year, it would still go back to today, your original date of filing, or an intent to file if you had that on file.
Real quick, Crystal, quick question. And when you talk about going back to the date, you're talking about back pay from the date that they filed?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. Either the date they filed or if they have an intent to file. So, and that's always following the notice of decision on that claim or a supplemental claim. So a veteran files, they were denied in 1975. Say they file a claim in 75, they were denied. They go ahead and they file a supplemental claim today. Obviously, it won't go back to 75. There are some instances where, like Niemer Law for Agent Orange and such, that the VA will consider. But that's only with the change of the law. Just you hurt your knee in service back in the 70s and you were denied initially. And now, now you're like, well, it's really bad. It's definitely related to service, right? I didn't do anything else in my life for this to happen. You can file a new claim. The back pay, though, will not go back to when you originally filed. It will go back to the date of this new supplemental claim.
Understood. And can you also break down as well how the VA interprets primary claims versus secondary claims? So if it's service-connected or secondary service-connected, can you break down kind of what their viewpoint is on that, at least from your experience, if you have an opinion on that?
Oh, I do. So we have, obviously, there's a lot of, you have a right knee injury and you start to alter your gait or you favor one over the other. So you know, your other knee goes out. Well, then you would claim that as a secondary, right? You could say, hey, my back or my other knee is, I'm favoring it all the time. I don't do anything else that would cause it to have this pain or limited motion or whatever. You just claim it with the VA as secondary. That they'll get a medical opinion. The examiner will look at the evidence and do an exam and make a determination. I don't want veterans to get discouraged and believe that that's the end all, though, if an examiner gives a negative opinion, because there's plenty of research out there that show that is, you know, that happens and it can be argued and appealed. And as long as they continuously pursue it, they could go all the way up to a law judge and could still be appealed and eventually hopefully granted. Ideally, that's what we're trying to get, right? Like, that's our job, is we want to get what we can service connected that can be. So as long as we have some medical evidence that shows it could be related, that's what we're trying to get. And that would be a secondary issue. I will say I've seen, this is probably where I don't think it's as uniform as it should be, because joints and back and all of that is something you could say, hey, my knee is out and I walk with an altered gait, or I have to use a cane, which is throwing off my hips and my back, you know, that can be seen and it can be argued. Whereas there's ones, you have veterans with PTSD and sleep apnea, and you have examiners giving medical opinions on this from every place in the country, and some give positive opinions and some give negative opinions. And so you can have two veterans, both claiming sleep apnea secondary to PTSD, and you'll get one that'll get a positive opinion and get it granted, and one that'll get a negative opinion and will be denied. That's probably one of the shortcomings of the system, because it's not uniform in that essence.
But, so just to explain that a little bit further, you're saying that if you file a claim with the regional office in the Northeast versus out West, depending on who you're submitting that to, whether it be the VA employee or, you know, the medical professional that they've sent you to, you may get a different opinion or result. Is that right?
Absolutely. Correct. It could be, and it doesn't even have to be across the nation. It could be a provider in Southern Florida says that sleep apnea is related, and you could have, or any condition, right? And you could, but specifically, this is one that I've seen a lot. And you could have one in Northern Florida that says the opposite, and you're like, well, which is it? How do you have two provide? I mean, that, again, that's the same state, but it's, each veteran is going to be looked at differently. The raters who look at these exams don't have the authority to go back and say, well, I rated an exam last week that says it's positive. They can't do that. That's not, it's outside their scope of authority, basically. So the only way that veteran can appeal their negative opinion would be to go get a positive opinion and resubmit the evidence. So then we have, you know, that to get the conflicting, we have one positive, one negative again. And so we get another one, or they work with an attorney, Roshu Law, and we have a way of writing that up to say, hey, you know, in this decision, this was done. And in the BVA decision, this was done. And this is how the VA needs to look at it. You need to get another opinion. Very thorough in the evidence we submit. So then the VA gets, you know, a second opinion, and that provider gets to look at all of that. If it's still denied, that's when it would go to, we could go to a higher level review by a decision review officer, or it could go up, we could do a BVA appeal, and it goes to a judge, and the judge does have the authority to say, you know, in these cases we granted it and the veteran has provided this information, therefore we can, you know, consider a grant in this sense for this veteran.
And some of the case law on that is kind of interesting. So at least to my knowledge on some of the administrative claims, they're not binding on the agency or the court, but they are persuasive, right? If you took the same factual scenario, and in one case, you know, they applied the same reasoning and found a positive opinion, and then in an identical case, they applied the same reasoning and found a negative opinion. I agree with you. I think in some instances, and depending on the claims that we have filed for different military families, I do think that they could use the other opinions as persuasive evidence.
Correct.
So, Crystal, let's talk. You brought it up, so you opened the door. We're gonna hit it head on. VSOs. You worked for one. Tell us about those. We're not here. Disclaimer: we're not here. Crystal and I, we know that VSOs serve a positive purpose for military families. We're not here to slam them, but we are here to say that sometimes free isn't the best. So it may just be something that is on a case-by-case basis. I know certain military families have better or different experiences than others. So with that being said, Crystal, tell us about the VSO process. I know that VSOs can help with original claims, whereas attorneys can't, you know, for, you know, attorneys can't get paid on original claims. So tell us about that.
So where I worked as a VSO, and I wasn't a VSO, I just worked for one as a, basically a transition officer. And I was helping active duty transition to civilian life in getting their benefits. So I was able to do a thorough review and help them draft their original claims. But that was the extent of what I was able to do. I think that goes into, so VSOs can look at, you know, once we help with the original claim, if you get help by a VSO, they can also, when they get your rating back, right, they'll let you know your rating is back. You can use them to communicate through the VA. Like if the system shows that your rating is done, your VSO, you can contact them and ask them, you know, what's going on, what's the next step. And they'll more than likely tell you, this is, you know, your rating, you have your rating in front of you, and this is what the VA requires for you to appeal that. And I think some of them, you know, depending on their organization and what they are allowed to do may be able to help you. You also might have to go, if they're chartered, you might have to go to one of their organizations in your area and work with the individuals that are helping veterans there.
So
however they do more than that, right? I think they're spread thin because they do more than help with claims. Like, they can help you get to and from your medical appointments. They can help with your education, like benefits. They have their hands in everything, and I don't think they get to specialize in just helping with claims, which is what we get to do.
Got it. That makes complete sense. And I figured we might want to explain VSO for our civilian listeners is Veteran Service Organization. So when you think of that, think of the large military organizations that are nonprofits that help individuals. Again, not here to put any on a pedestal or throw any under the bus, just here to explain what they are compared to an attorney. So, Crystal, let's say somebody is not getting the assistance that they need from their VSO. What does that look like? I mean, can you give me an example of a negative experience with a VA disability claim that you've witnessed, either working at the VA or working at a VSO, or, you know, any other experience that you want to discuss that we can have our military families on the lookout for?
Okay. I've witnessed a VSO answer a phone and talk to a veteran regarding their rating. And it's actually really disheartening because it was almost like the VSO was frustrated, but again, I can't speak for somebody else. But he basically just told the veteran, the VA needs you to get medical evidence. If you don't have medical evidence, you don't have a claim. You can't fight it. And that's, having worked for the VA, I know that's incorrect. So it was really like, I understand a veteran's frustrations when they have that. That's definitely one I think a lot of veterans probably hear. You need medical evidence. But I can tell you, as a veteran, and I speak to multiple veterans every single day, we don't go to the doctor all the time. If a veteran went to the doctor every time their knee hurt, they would live at the doctor's office, or a headache, or, you know, every time they have anxiety or depression, they're not going to go to the doctor every single day, and they're not going to have that medical evidence. Some veterans don't ever go to the doctor. It's one of those, it's something that they were taught in service. It's like a mindset that we laugh and say, take vitamin M, but that's what it is. You take Motrin and you push through the pain and you get done what you have to do. And that the mission comes first, right? So they don't go to the doctor. In fact, the only evidence they would have to submit would be their lay statement, which according to all the VA regulations is competent. A competent lay statement is sufficient for a veteran to say, I can't get out of bed, my knee hurts, right? So if a veteran says that, the VA has to take that evidence. That is competent, like lay evidence that they have to consider. Another issue that I personally knew is when I left the service, I had a VSO and, you know, helped me fill out the initial paperwork, and I completed that and I got my original 30%. And after a few years, I had another incident occur that I believed was related. I did all the research and I worked it on my own and I argued it. It took 6 years for a VA appeal. Took me about 5.5 to get before a judge. But when I finally got my time before the judge, right before I walked in, my VSO said, well, do you have new medical evidence? And I said, no. And he made the comment, well, you're just wasting the judge's time. If you don't have new evidence, you're not going to get anything granted.
Unbelievable.
And he really discouraged me going in. And I said, well, that's not how this works. And so I got my time before the judge. The judge offered me an exam and some other stuff, and they ended up granting it. And they backpaid it, you know, back to, because it took 6 years. But if that's how that VSO treated me, then I am certain that's how these VSOs are. You know, that I'm not the only one. I can't, you know, for that to have happened. I was like, but a lot of veterans don't know that. You know, they, again, it's all up. Do you have medical evidence? And it's like, Yeah, medical evidence is solid, but so is a competent lay statement. And it doesn't even have to be by the veteran. You can talk about something like mental health, and I'll tell you that, again, veterans will be like, I'm fine. The way I'm responding is fine. Like, something could trigger them, and they'll be like, oh, that's normal. It's okay. But their spouses, children, coworkers, you know, any other family member, anybody that's close in their life that sees that would be like, that is not an okay reaction. That is not a normal reaction. You know, something is going on. You're not like, how you're responding is not how a typical, I guess, civilian would respond to that. You know, I've had veterans say that they open up a fridge and a coworker said something and they've thrown a jug of milk at them. Like, that's not a normal response. I've also had people talk about being in a combat zone or a humanitarian situation. And, you know, they talk to their families about, you know, they go home, they talk to their spouses about what they witnessed, and they have no emotion, and their family members are getting this in a secondary nature, and they're having more of an emotional reaction. That's a mental health reaction, right? Like, that is, and their family members are like, you have to process this the right way. Like, how do we get you help to do that? And so sometimes it takes an outsider looking in to make that statement to the veteran to get a competent lay statement to submit to the VA and say, hey, he doesn't go to the doctor, she doesn't go to the doctor, but this is how she acts. This is what I've witnessed this veteran do. This is how, you know, what I live with day in and day out with this veteran. And sometimes that is exactly what the VA needs to say, hey, here we go. This is a competent lay statement. We need to get an exam based off of this.
It really is. And I know we're running short on time here, but I really want to get into medical exams. What are some of the worst things that a veteran can do at a medical exam in terms of advocating for themselves, right? Like, the worst thing you can do is the VA finally gives you your medical exam and you show up and you say, yep, all good, nothing wrong. And then you go home and you've got, you know, a ton of different medical conditions that you experience daily. What is the best way for a veteran or military family to advocate for themselves at a medical examination?
Okay, so this is probably the thing that I stress the most when I talk to our veterans. And I say, call me before your appointment, you know, anytime, like, let's talk about this, because we can have a conversation. A veteran will tell me, oh, you know, my back went out today or 2 days ago, or it hurts all the time. But again, they joke and they say, oh, I took Motrin, the good old vitamin M. Great, you took that. How do you feel every day? Well, sometimes I can't get out of bed. It takes me a while. Okay, they go. So we file the claim, right? And I've seen it multiple times. They go to the doctor. The doctor's like, for their, you know, their exam, well, how's your back? Oh, it's good today. That's not what the examiner is asking. Like, how is it, like, overall, right? They need to, how often is your back going out, or your, you know, or how often are you having headaches that are putting you down? Not that you're fine today, right? And then the other thing is, and this is a huge one, specifically to back and knees, shoulders, but an examiner will say, because part of the range of motion, right, we need to see what the range of motion is. They'll say, oh, bend over and touch your toes. Well, as a veteran, your military mentality is do what you're told. You bend over, you touch your toes. Mind you probably won't walk for 3 days after that. I've had that happen. I've seen it a lot of times to our veterans. And they're like, well, they told me to touch my toes. But you have to stop when it hurts. Like, that is how they get an accurate look at the actual severity of your condition. If you can only bend or move a few inches and you don't have full range of motion, that's what the VA needs to see. Because if you bend all the way and you can't move for 3 days or 2 weeks, or you really throw something out and you end up, you know, at the hospital, the exam is still going to show full range of motion with pain, which is not going to get you the higher percentage, right? Like, it's going to give you the lowest percentage with pain, because that's what your condition warrants during that exam. But what about the, you know, the time following that when you are completely incapacitated? Like, that's not documented unless you go to the doctor.
Great information. And you heard it here first. If you're going to a medical exam for VA disability claim, you have to advocate for yourself. And that is exactly what, you know, we love about representing veterans, is we get to advocate. The veterans get to tell their story. and hopefully making it an easier world for our military families. Crystal, thanks so much for joining us today, and going to throw it back to Casey to take us to the end of the hour.
Yeah, we're already out of time, but good information. Go back and listen, WOKV.com or Chris's website and his YouTube, Brochu Law. Justin hooking us up with a video version of the show. He works at Nova Productions. Hit him up if you need any video work. Chris does it, and he does a great job. For Chris Brochu, for Crystal, I'm Casey Kurtz. We'll do it again next week.